So we are holding on Kofiud Gimel Omud Beis, five lines from the top. Okay. So now we're starting on sort of a new topic. We've been talking about who inherits from who, and whatever, and we're still going to resume with that later, but now we're going kind of off topic to talk about a general issue involving the dinim of Yerusha. Tani Rabbi Bar Chanina Kamei de Rav Nachman. When the Pasuk says, V'hoya b'yoyim hanchilo yasbono, the Pasuk says, in connection with a father who bequeaths his inheritance to his children, that says that the Bechor has to get a double portion, so why the expression b'yoyim, on the day that he's manchil? We learn from that, b'yoyim at the machlo machlois, v'yat the machlo machlois v'layimo. That implies we make Nachla happen. We make Nachla happen by day. Mafil is Meloshin as the Pasuk thing. But you have a Loshin a Pasuk in a few places. For example, Zoysa or Tashepipur Lachan Benachla. So it's an expression that's for a Nachla happening is that it falls. In English, also, you would say that a certain property falls to a person.
Right.
So only by day are you mafil machlois, not v'iyat the mafil machlois for laila.
The question.
It's a statement. The braisa saying when the pasuk says v'hari b'yoyim hanchilo yesbonim, the word b'yoyim means that nachlos only take place by day. Nachlos are only established by day, not by night.
Now
what does that mean? It's not really. It's a somewhat new topic in the dinim of Yerusha. Question is, Omalei Abaya, what does that mean? So on the face of it, as soon as the person passes away, his heirs automatically are going to inherit whatever it is. So if you're saying that doesn't happen by night, Elamayasa, by that logic, are you telling me the Shachiv B'Yimamo or the Yausile B'nei, only if a person passes away by day, do his children Yaushin him? Man the Shachiv B'Leila Lo Yausile B'nei, and he passes. No, but as soon as he passes away, on the face of it, the Nachla goes to his children automatically. There's nothing that has to be established about that. So on the face of it, if you're saying it only happens by day,
that's
what we're going to talk about. But for purposes of the question, Abaya assumed that what it means is that the Nachla automatically goes to the Yoshim only by day, not by night. So what does that mean? Why shouldn't it go automatically equally well by night? If the guy passes away by night, hold on.
Okay, so
are you going to tell me that if a person passes away by night, his children do not automatically yarshin him? Maybe Abaya says to Rabbi Bachanina, maybe what your braisa means is not the actual Yerusha itself, but rather the din of Nachlos, meaning that Nachlos can only be judged by day, just like regular dinim momenus can only be judged by day. Hold on. It's not so obvious, not at all. And what it means, din exactly, is also almost every line of the Gemara we're going to be learning in the Sugya is going to be the subject of an argument among Rishonim what it means. So relax and listen. Okay. So din Nachlos is. Nachla is considered a mishpat. In other words, don't think, for example, that it should be, let's say, that you should think that maybe dividing up a nachla is like dividing up any partnership. You don't necessarily need a beis din for it in the first place. Just like if two people want to divide up their partnership, they don't necessarily need a beis din. You only need it if one of them is arguing that the division has to be fair or whatever, but in and of itself, it doesn't necessarily require a beis din. And in that case, maybe it should be able to happen by night. But no, we're saying that It has to dafka happen by day. And furthermore, the Rashbam points out that really, in general, we know from a different source that dinim momenus have to happen by day. But the point is, we're saying over here that usually you have dinim momenus can be started by day and finished off by night. Here, what we're saying is we have a limud from the word b'yoyim that it means that they have to be finished by day as well. Yeah. Okay. Tanya, as we learn in a braisa, when the pasuk is v'hoytel of Nei Yisrael v'chukas mishpat, the pasuk says at the end of the parashat Nachlois in parashat Pinchas, it says this should be for Nei Yisrael as a chukah of mishpat. So it calls it mishpat, meaning ur'a kol ha'parasha kula li'yis din. It means this entire parasha has been has been ora to become a din. What do I mean by that? Ora, the Rashbam says in Loshon Ma'ora, it happens. In other words, it's been finalized. That pasuk finalizes that the concept of nachla is considered a din. Therefore, it needs to have a base. Din mishpat, same thing. The point is that it needs to be. It is like dinim mominus. It needs to be done. It needs to be done by a base din of three. It needs to be done by day. And actually, the Rashbam says, once we know it by Nachlos, then actually, fakir, we learn from that for all other Dini Mominus. That's not so simple, because you have the Gemara and Sanhedrin brings a different limud for the concept that other Dini Mominus have to happen
so
by day.
From here,
we know that, from according to the Rashbam, yes. And actually, he says, though, you still need both Psukim, because one teaches us that the word B'yoyim HaNechila is talking about a father bequeathing to his son. You wouldn't necessarily know that it applies to other Nachlos. L'chukas Mishpat, which is at the end of Parashat Nachlos, which is talking about Nachla in general, from any relative to any relative, teaches us that it applies to other relatives as well.
Because
right there you have the Torah describing all the different Nachlos, from parent to child, from child to parent, from to brothers. That's the Rashbam says that from that actually we learn that once we have it said by Nachla that it applies across the board to all Nachlos, then we learn from that in turn that it applies by other Dini Mominus as well. Because with it, once it's called mishpat, implies since it's called a mishpat, that means that it has to be by day, and therefore any other mishpat also has to be by day. So the Rashbam understands that when we say the whole parasha has been ma'ora loshen vayikra mikreha, the Rashbam says, in other words, it's happened, it's been definitively established that it is a din. There's a different explanation of Oro that it means it's like been joined together. Anyway, the point is the whole thing is considered a din. Now, what does it mean, liyas din? So according to the Rashbam, it's talking about this idea that you need a base din and it needs to be done by day, etc.
It
can be a base din shel edyotas, as we're going to see in the next piece, but it has to be three people for a base din. However, Tosfos argues with that and says that no, what it means is liyas din is another point. If you have, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now, if you have three people who were there at the time when the guy gives his tava or whatever, they are considered a base din, and that's it. What they accomplish at that time, when they make the tava official, that's it. There's no arguing against it. There's no, the Yorish can't say, well, I want to go to a higher base din or whatever. It's considered a din. That's it. They were there.
Even if they're whatever,
as long as it's by day, as we're going to see. The Chiddur of Yehuda, and this goes like what Rabbi Yehuda said. The Amr of Yehuda, Shloisha Shenichmesu Levakar Esachayla, if three people come to be Mevakar Chayla, Rotsu Kosvin, so if they want, they can act as Aiding. Chayla, a sick person, Chayla, doesn't mean if she's a woman. Fine, same difference. The point is that you have three people over there. So Rotsu Kosvin, if they want, they can act as Edim and just write down what he says. Rotsu Oisin Din, where if they want, then instead they can sit down and actually make the din right there on the spot and act as a base. On the other hand, Shnayim Kosvin Ven Oisin Din. There's two of them, since two people can't constitute a base din, and three for a base din, therefore all they can do is write down their Edus. They cannot act as a base din. Now, there's a lot of detail in this. First of all, the Rashbam says, we're talking about why we're mentioning that they came to be Mevakar Chayla. The Rashbam says because the point is they did not come with the intention of being Edim. If they came for the intention of being Edim, that they were actually invited to come there to act as Edim, then we have, as the Gemara itself is going to talk about in a minute, Ein Eid Nafta Dayim. That Edim cannot become Dayonim on a case. Therefore, they could only act as Edim. They could not act as Dayonim. Tosfos argues
that. You're saying Edim and
we're saying that according to the Rashbam, because they were invited there to accept Edus, to listen to what the Shchiv Merah is talking about or whatever. And by the way, actually, let's go back a little bit. First of all, are we talking about a Shchiv Merah or who are we talking about over here? The Rashbam says, yes, we're talking about a Shchiv Merah. Now, the problem with that is, of course, that what do you mean? You make a din. You make it's official that the Shchiv Merah, as we're going to learn later in the parak, can change his mind. If he recovers, he's able. We've had it before. We're going to talk about it in detail later in the parak. Yeah. So Rashbam says we must be talking about that. First of all, that he only gave away part of his property. The din that a shchiv merah can change his mind is if he gave away all of his nechassim. before he died, because then we assume it was on condition that if he recovers from this illness, he wants to have back his nechassim. He doesn't want to leave himself completely destitute.
So he could change all his property,
but not if he said, "I'm giving only away part of it," because then it means he left something for himself. So then there's no reason to assume that he had any reason to renege on this. That's first of all, and second of all, there would have to be that kinyan was done, as we're going to talk about soon. That's how the Rashbam learned that. So we're talking that they came to visit a shchivmina, and he's giving away part of his property and making a kinyan on it. That's when we're saying they can be edim or dayanim, as the case may be. Tosfos doesn't learn like that. Tosfos says that actually we're not talking about a shchivmina at all, because the whole concept that what a shchivmina says is a done deal is only midrabanan. Here we're talking about a daraisa level. So therefore, Tosfos says that we're talking about a matnas bari. So why are we calling it nachla? Because typically a usual matnas bari is not done that it's going to take effect right now. It usually is done in such a way that it'll take effect right before he dies.
How do you call matana a mishpa?
Because it is a form of Yerusha. He's bequeathing his property. So that's the thing. Because usually a matnas bari is done in such a way that it should take effect right before he dies, because he doesn't want to give away his nechassim, and then he could still end up living another 50 years, and what's he going to have? So therefore, usually a matnas bari is arranged in such a way that it will take effect right before he dies. Therefore, it can be considered a form of Yerusha. Tosfos also mentions, briefly, and Rabbeinu Yonah explains in more detail,
the difference with Rashbam?
Because according to the Rashbam, we're talking about a matnas shivmana, and according to Tosfos, that wouldn't work, because a matnas shivmana is the same as the Rabban.
What would that change in your whole...
It would change what we're talking about over here. What is the scenario? Did they come to visit a shivmana, or did they come to and he's giving away part of his nechassim and making a kinyan on it, or are they visiting a bari and he's giving away all or part of his property? Then Tosfos also mentions another point, which they mentioned more briefly, that Rabbeinu Yonah mentions in more detail, which is, later on in the parak, we're going to have the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broika that talks about what if, for example, a guy has, let's say, five sons, and he says, "I want only one of them to yarshim." Is that valid or not? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Broika says that it is. So then, in that case, we can be talking about a scenario like that, where the guy is a shchivmara, but he's saying that I want one particular son or one particular brother of mine or whatever to yarish me instead of all of them. That such a thing is valid. So that could be also what we're talking about. Anyway, okay. So whatever it is, that's the scenario. What do we mean that? What do we mean if they want? So again, now to the next thing. We said if they want, they can write it down. They can act as edim. If they want, they can be dayanim. Again, we have a machloekus what that means. According to the Rashbam, only because they came just ad hoc to be mevakeh chola, they didn't know that they were going to be hearing a tzava of any kind. Only because of that are they able to be either edim or dayanim. But if they were invited there, if the shchivmana or one of his relatives, for that matter, or whatever, sent them an invitation saying, "Please come over here to hear the edus, what he wants to say," then they can't turn around and be dayanim, even if they didn't actually. Because they need not to die. Again, Tosfos argues with that and says, no. If they actually testified in Beis Din, they can't serve as dayanim. But if they were only invited there to be edim, sure, they can change their mind and decide that instead they'd rather be dayanim themselves.
So according to Tosfos, it depends what the start of the whole thing is. If they start as dayanim,
according to the Rashbam, it's what they were invited there for, what they came there having in mind to do.
Tosfos.
And Tosfos would say it's whether they actually testified in Beis Din. Rabbeinu Yonah also mentions another point. He says maybe the reason why it's saying that they came to visit, the chiddush in it, even though they came to visit, they can still serve as a beis din, even though they had no intention when they came of serving as a beis din. Okay. Anyway, so then we continue again that if there are only two of them, since there's only two of them and they can't function as a beis din, then therefore they can only write down their eders, they can only be edim. And now, how is that relevant to what we're saying over here about day or night? Because for Omer Rav Chista, because then Rav Chista comes and says about that, Lo Shono El Bayom, all of this is only talking about that they came to visit the guy by day. Because, now, so the Rashbam explains the concept, which the Gemara mentions in a few places, called Lo Tehe Shmiya Gdola Mir'iyah. Usually, Beis Din is in the position of Shmiya. They're hearing something from Edim. The Edim saw something with their eyes. They come to Beis Din and they testify, and Beis Din only hears of it from the mouths of the Edim. In this case, what do you have? These people themselves heard what the Shchivmara said, or Bari, or whatever the case may be, whatever. They heard what this testator said. On the theory that Lo Tehe Shmiya Gdola Mir'iyah, and that it's by day, when by day is when Beis Din can sit, and as we just said, that Nachla is considered, Yerusha is considered a din, it has to take place by day. Therefore, they could have sat as a Beis Din, So therefore, instead, they could either be Edim and go testify in front of another Beis Din, or they could be Dayanim and no Edus is needed to testify in front of them because they themselves are sitting there and they heard it. Now, that's not so simple either, because there's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that tells, for example, how you have a Mishnah and a Gemara over there that talk about a case where the Sanhedrin themselves saw, where members of the Sanhedrin themselves saw the new moon, and say over there that they can't necessarily just sit there themselves and say Mekodesh, they need aiding. So then in the face of it, we don't say, to which other Rishonim talk about, like the Rashba talks about that over there it's different because the Torah says you have to see, over there the Torah says you have to see and you have to have Eidos here, not necessarily. Okay. All right. Ava Balaila, but Rav Chista continues, if this happened, that they came by night to visit the Chola and they heard what he said, Afila Balaila, Afila Shloisha, even if there's three of them, then they can't be Dayanim. Kosvin Vein Oisin Din. Then they can only write down their eders. They cannot make a din. In other words, you're going to need other eding, because if they that's the thing. So okay, the Rashbam says like this: because if they saw it by night, they were not able to be dayanim at that time. So if they saw it by day, they themselves could have been dayanim. Fine, and therefore they can instead be dayanim without needing any aid. But if they saw it at a time when they themselves cannot be dayanim, then all they can be is aidim. And again, according to the Rashbam, ein aid nachadayin is a more general principle. Once you have somebody who is in a position of being an aid, he cannot turn around and be a dayan. Since by night, by definition, they can only be aidim, because aidus because dayanim cannot sit and hear din Torah at night. Therefore, they can only be aidim, and once they're aidim, ein aid nachadayin. So we don't say lo teheshmi agdol mirir, because when they saw it, you can't consider it that it's as if aidus was given in front of them, because they themselves couldn't have sat as dayanim at that time. Again, Tosfos argues with that and says that no, the reason why over here ein aid nachadayin is a different issue, not what the Rashbam is saying that whether they were by day or by night. The reason in general why ein aid nachadayin, Tosfos says, is because you need aidus.
Is it an additional reason or it's a replacement?
It's a replacement reason. So the Rashbam is making this distinction that if they saw the aidus by night, since they wouldn't have been able to testify at that point, then therefore it can only be considered aidus. And once you have that aid nachadayin, Tosfos doesn't agree with that concept. So they say no.
You can be an aid by night.
You can be you heard aidus by night. But again, remember according to Tosfos, ein aid nachadayin only applies when you actually came and testified in Beis Din. It doesn't apply like the Rashbam says only when they were only invited to the aid. So therefore, Tosfos gives a different reason why we're saying over here, ein aid nachadayin. The reason is because it's going to be eidus she'i after yochel lazima. We have, the Gemara talks in various places, we'll learn about it extensively in Sanhedrin and Makkah. The simple thing, eidus, that's the point. No, eidus by definition has to be able to be muzah. In order for eidus to be valid, there has to be the capability that mazimin, that other eidim, should be able to come and say, imanu hayisim, you were with us at that time, and therefore you're... Now, in this case, if the eidim themselves are the dayanim, there's not going to be eidus shat yochel lazima, because the dayanim will just say, we don't want to hear your eidus, because it'll be against us. So therefore, it's an eidus shat yochel lazima. They have the ability to say, we don't want to sit here to hear this particular part of the din Torah. Yeah. They're not going to accept Eidos against themselves. Also, Tosfos mentions another point also, which actually the Rashbam mentions also, that you have a Xeris HaKosov, that you have to have Eidim and Dayanim, have to be two separate people. You have to have Eidim standing in front of Dayanim. You can't just have that they stand up and say something and then they sit down as Dayanim. So because the Pasuk is, V'omdu Shnei HaNoshim Lifnei Hashem. The two people have to stand Lifnei Hashem, meaning in front of the Beis Din. So we see you have Shnei HaNoshim and you have Lifnei Hashem. It's two different groups. Actually, now it's interesting. The Mordechai brings from the famous Bala Tosfos, the Stein Mikutzi. I think we're all familiar with Marcus Lehmann's story about it, which Lav Davka is so true, but whatever. Anyway, the Mordechai brings in the name of Stein Mikutzi a different reason why Ein Aid Nachadayin, because he says it Eidus has to have been given in front of a Beis Din. But if there were to be hazama over here, fine. Let's say that the Beis Din is not able to say, we don't want to hear this Eidur because it will be against us. What's going to happen if it does take place hazama? They're possible Eidurs. They're also possible Dayanus. Then there was no Eidurs in front of a Beis Din in the first place. No Eidurs in front of a Beis Din in the first place means no hazama is possible, because hazama only applies to Eidurs that took place in front of a Beis Din. So therefore, ein eid nafa dat. That's what the Stam Rikudim says. Okay. Anyway, getting back to, so we see from the halacha is that ein eid nafa dayan. What the reason behind it is, you have all these different reasons. I don't know how much of a difference there is between them and halacha, but those are the various reasons that are brought among Rishonim. On top, I should also mention, Tosfos themselves mentions over here, when we say ein eid nafa dayan, that only applies to things that are right. It doesn't apply to things that are bon.
So
things that are banan and aid could be a dayan, yeah. For example, we learned in Ksobos about kiyum shtarit. You can have, for example, that the dayanim themselves recognize the signatures of the aidim, and they go and certify the shtar on that basis.
Whatever.
No, everybody holds that. Everybody holds that, as far as I know. What other examples? I don't know. Tosfos also brings from gittin, for example, in connection with fun and nechtem, We learned and then getting over there, yeah. So yeah. So then aid nafa dayan. On the other hand, Tosfos points out, you have the flip side of it is when it comes to dinin fashus, then we say even if the dayan only thought, now again, Tosfos remember saying that ain't aid nafa dayan means only if the guy actually came and gave aiders and basis. However, when it comes to dinin nefashos, we have a higher standard. Even if the guy only saw it, he can't be a dayan. Because there, when it comes to dinin nefashos, we're going to learn in Sanhedrin, you have the base, some members of the base, not all the members of the base, in principle or whatever, have to be able to be mahafich b'schutzai, they have to be able to look for a reason to exonerate him. And if they themselves saw it, it's going to be impossible for them to be able to find any reason, because seeing something has a very powerful effect on you. This is talked about all over the place. That particular reason is mentioned as the difference between hearing something and seeing something. How, for example, it was important that we had to seal, of course, by Matan Torah, Rolinus and Nishmi for Shemin and because sight has a much more powerful effect on you than any of your other senses. Okay. Anyway, the point is, getting back to the Gemara, so Abaya is saying, based on that din that we just talked about, this din of Rabbi Yehuda and this. Detail that Rav Chisda mentioned about, the difference between by day and by night. Evidently, then, there is a difference when it comes to dinin nachlus, when it comes to dinin yerushas, that there's a difference between what happens by day and what happens by night. That only by day can we say that the people who came to be mevaka chola can serve as dayanim, otherwise they can only serve as aidim. So, he says to Rav Bachanina, when you mention your original braisa by yoimat amakul nachlus, beyond the makul nachlus valayla, that nachlus can only take place by day and not by night, is that maybe what you meant? Maybe you didn't. I understood you to be saying that you mean literally if a person passes away by night, his nachla doesn't automatically go to his children. But is it maybe all you meant is basically this, that the din, that the din of dividing up the nachla, the din that they're going to sit as a base din, and the Tosfos said that you have to have a base din at all, like the Rashbam says, or like Tosfos says that if there were three of them there and it was by day, then you can't. There's no second guessing what they decided. Amalei, Rabbi Bachanina said yes. Yes. Talking on the Kamina. Yes, that's exactly what I meant. Not like you're misunderstanding, but that there is a difference between day and night. Yes, of course, Nachla itself, if no Beis Din is needed, for example, it was only one heir, then of course it happens just as well by day and by night. But if a Beis Din is needed for whatever reason, for example, in the case of a Tzavat Shimra, or Tzavat Bori, or whatever the case was, then it can only happen by day. Now, a related discussion, Itmar. Kinyan ad emasai choydeh. Okay, so now the next thing we need to ask is like this. When a kinyan is done, how long do you have to change your mind? Now, what kind of kinyan are we talking about? The Rashbam says,
how do you know if you can change your mind?
That's the question. We
no, you said it out long.
No, because evidently a kinyan, there has to be some way. I mean, so the Rashbam explains like this: when you make a kinyan, usually you may want to put tznoyim on it or whatever you may want to have. We assume that when a person is machna something, he has in mind that he has a certain window of time to change his mind. How long is that window? Now, what kind of kinyan are we talking about? the Rashbam says, brings from Rabbeinu Hananel, that we're talking about over here, whether it was a body, whether it was a shchiv merah, but we're talking mitzvah, because again, if it's a shchiv merah who gave away all his property, then it's indefinitely. Anytime he gets better, he can go back on it. But so in those cases, now, there are other opinions among the Rishonim. There's an opinion brought from Rabbi Yehuda al-Bar Galoyim, who says that specifically we're talking over here only about a matnas shchiv merah. And also only that we're talking about a Kenyan Suda, meaning excluding excluding a matnas bori or any other kind of Kenyan or whatever. Then maybe he could change his mind because they differ, but not after that. Our Gemara is going to give a longer period for that. So they're just trying to bring what he say. They don't necessarily agree with him. They agree with him maybe to the extent that it would that maybe this din that we're going to talk about only applies to a Kenyan Suda. Not necessarily does it apply, so there are Rishonim who say that it applies to all Kinyanim in general, even, for example, Mashicha or Agbar or whatever, that you would have the amount of time the Gemara now is going to talk about, how long. But most of the Rishonim hold, and this is how it's brought by Halacha, is that we're talking only about a Kinyan Suda.
Why?
Because a Kinyan Suda, you're not actually exchanging anything of value. All you're doing is you're doing a symbolic Kinyan. Therefore, it's more reasonable to assume that you want to have, that you're going to have a longer time to change your mind about it, as opposed to when there's Mashicha, Agbar, Kesef, when it comes to things that are nicknam of Kesef or whatever, Lachura, you shouldn't have that large window of time. Okay. So, Ad Emasai Choyzer, how long do you have to change your mind from this king? Rabba Omer calls Manshe Yoshvin. Rabba says it's as long as they're still sitting over there, because that's the point. As long as they're sitting there, as long as they're still, then he has in mind that he can change his mind. But if they get up, then no. Rabbi Yosef Amar Kol Zman Sha'oskin Ba'Oseinim. Rabbi Yosef says, no, not even as long as they're sitting there, only as long as they're still talking about this matana or whatever it was that they were koine with that Kenyan. But once they go off onto another topic, then it's too late already.
Oh, so they'll be still sitting now.
Mm-hmm. Right, so they could still be sitting, but they went on to another, they went on to talk about another topic, that's it. It's gone. Rabbi Yosef Kavasidi di Mistabra. So Rabbi Yosef says, you know what, I can bring you a svara that you should say like I'm saying. That's only as long as they're talking about that in. Which is the exact thing that we just quoted. This din that we just quoted, that Rabbi Yehuda said, if three people come to me, that if they want, they can write it down and if they as edim, and if they want instead, they could make a din torah, they could serve as dayanim. So he says, "V'sakadaydach called Mansha Yoshvin." If you're going to argue, like Rabba says, that even after they've gone off to another topic, but they're still sitting over there, and you're going to say they can still change their mind, leichosh dil mahadabe. So why? What do you mean oisin din? Which is mashma the fact this they can make a din, and then they're still sitting over there and talking with the chol. What if he changes his mind? Then it's not a din. What? No, but if Rabba is saying that, in other words, the question is, Rabbi Yehuda is using the expression "rotu oisim din," which implies what they said, especially according to Tosafot's understanding of oisim din. That's it. There's no going back on it. What do you mean oisim din? The guy himself, the shchiv merah or the bori or whatever it is, can change his mind. Tosafot says that's not what the Gemara means, because then you could ask in general when you get to a matnas shchiv merah or any case like that, the guy could change his mind. You don't need specific evidence that he didn't change his mind. So Tosfos rather says the question is like this: we're saying that they can sit as a base team, but if the guy is able to change his mind as long as they're still sitting there, you can't really call what they did a din at all. You can't really call it that they not. Well, you should be another. No, rather what it is you should say that why are you being matriach them to serve as a base din when it might end up being for nothing? Because as long as they're sitting there, the guy can still change his mind. So what are you telling me they're going to serve as a base din, implying that you are telling them go to the trouble of acting as a base din? Why should they go to the trouble of acting as a base din when what they say, the next minute he could change his mind while they're still sitting over there?
That's
Tosfos explains that that's what the Gemara's question.
According to Taser, there would be no changing of any mind, any Beit Din, according to
Taser. No, the question is, why are we matriach based in to do something that could easily be undone in a moment?
That would be
tircha. Yeah, Yeah, okay.
And therefore, what Joseph is saying is you cannot change your mind.
No, because the Gemara is here. No, well, that's what Yosef is arguing, that therefore it seems more logical, that once they go off to another topic, then that's it, the din is a din. Fine, that's not such a tirchah for Beis Din. All they have to do is they hear what he's saying, they pass in the din right there on the spot, then they start talking about another Indian, and it's common enough, after all, in a conversation to start talking about another topic anyway, so then that's it.
And if the guy says, wait a minute, changing my mind.
It could happen, fine, but the point is that they can make sure that at least they can see to it that the last thing there, you're sitting over there, you pass in the din, and then immediately you go off onto another topic. It's not so common. Now the Gemara is going to say that they could go off to another topic and then return to this one, or they could get up and then they could sit down. Fine, but it's more common to go from one topic to another than it is to get up and then sit back down again.
Sure.
So that's the question. Amar Ravashi, so Ravashi says, I'm Ritzel Shmaita Kamei Rav Kahana. I told over this whole discussion to Rav Kahana, who was his Rebbe, and Rav Kahana says, Rav Yosef min Nicha. So what are you thinking, that it's so easy to understand according to Rav Yosef? Why is Rav Yosef himself bringing a proof from this? After all, Veloichos Dil Mahadabe, according to Rav Yosef also, you could ask the question that he might change his mind, that he might change his mind before they have a chance to go on to another topic. So what would you have to say? Rabbi Yosef would say, that Rabbi Yosef would have to say that this only works if they pass in the din, and then immediately they start talking about another topic, because then that way, well, that'll make it that he can't change his mind. Hachinami, well, then you could answer just as well, according to Rabbah. Dekamu v'hadar yisivu. Fine, you could say according to Rabbah the same thing. All they have to do is get up and then sit back down again, and that's it. It'll confirm what they're saying. Okay, Rabbi Yosef himself might argue that it's more common to change topics of conversation than it is to get up and sit down, but still, from Rabbi Yehuda's din over there about Shlosha Shenichnas Ulevaka Sachola, you can't really prove one way or the other. It could be, you could argue like Rabbi Yosef, but you could also argue like Rabbah. Yes, that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
However, the Gemara says, ultimately, v'hilchosat habaseh de Rabbi Yosef v'sodeh inyin u'mechzeh. However, in the end, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef in three cases. Sodeh, which is a case that we had in the first parak. We had a case over there where brothers are dividing up their father's inheritance. One of them has, so you have a field over here, let's say. One of them has a field right next door, adjacent to it. So he argues, I want the part of our father's land that's adjacent to mine. That way it'll be one big field, sort of like Bar Mitzvah. So Rabbah argues, sure, give it to him. It would be Midas Doim for them to argue otherwise. All the pieces are worth the same amount. Whereas Rabbi Yosef says over there, no, the other brothers can argue, we consider that particular property to be more valuable than the other ones, as valuable as the Nechassim of Bar Merion, a very rich guy from those times. So if you want that particular piece, you have to give up extra of the other Nechassim to compensate for that, because we consider that particular piece is worth more than the other two pieces.
He wants it,
but... Maybe it's because he wants it, or no, they could say, they could say whatever it is, that we have reason to think that piece of property is more valuable. And the halacha, so that's one of the things where the halacha is like a Yosef, that they have a valid reason to say that, and therefore you can't say kofen amidas don. Which would be, kofen amidas don would be that Beis Din would force them to give it to him, because he gains from it, he now has one big field, one big contiguous field. Zenan of Zalakoso, yeah, he's gaining, they're not losing. That's Kokanam Midas Doim. But Rabbi Yosef disagrees with that. There's not necessarily Midas Doim involved over here. They may have a valid reason why they want to hang on to that piece of property. And the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef.
And if that value would not be there, they would force him that way?
Not only them forcing him, it's the other way, right? He can force them that he gets that one. That's according to Rabbah, according to Rabbi Yosef, no.
Okay.
So these are machlokes between Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. So that's Sodeh. Inyan is our thing over here, that Rabbi Yosef said as long as they're dealing with Oisei Inyan, that he can change his mind, but not once they go off onto another topic. Umechta is a case later on in the next parak where a person says to his wife, I want my nechosim to go to you and your son. So what does that mean? What percentage goes to her and what percentage goes to the son? So Rabbi Yosef says over there that it means that half goes to her and half goes to the son. Since he didn't specify, and Rabbi Yosef actually learns it from a pasuk where it says the lachem upon him. It says the lachem upon him behoisel Aaron and Levana. The lachem upon him goes to Aaron and his children, meaning the other kohenim, and that's what it means. It means the kohen gadol gets half the lachem upon him, and the other kohenim got the other half. At the end of Masechta Sukkah, by the way, it describes that how the lachem upon him is divided up. That the incoming mishmer gets six, and the outgoing mishmer gets six. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, 5 and 7. But really, what it is after each mishmer gets their portion, they have to give half of it to the kohen gadol. And then they have the other half, and they divide it among themselves. Incidentally, there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, a piece of Agadah in Avodah Zarah that tells about one time a Roman senator who went on Mesiras Nefesh to Mimavatel Gzera against the Jewish people. It's a long story over there. The emperor of that time had wanted to make Zeta to wipe out all the Jewish people in his empire. The senator argued against him that you're not going to be able to. You're never going to be able to wipe out the Jews anyway. The emperor sentenced him to death. Before he's killed, he manages to get himself a bris milah. And as he's dying, as he's being condemned, he says, "I want my nechassim to go to Rabbi Akiva and his chaverim." So Rabbi Akiva explained, again, on the basis of the same pasuk, that it means what the guy meant was half of it should go to me, Rabbi Akiva, and the other half to all the other chacham. Tia Bar Sholem, the Gemara calls him over there. Is the name
not
of the set.
Not divided by the number of
chacham. Not divided by the number of chacham, but since he specified Rabbi Akiva, and then all the other ones, then it means half goes to Rabbi Akiva and half goes to the others. Yeah. So that's Rabbi Yosef says that, the same thing in the case of Yerusha. Yeah, that's what happened. The Gemara mentions, we learned in Nedarim, there were six sources from which Rabbi Akiva became very rich. This was one of them, Tia Bar Sholem's, from half of Tia Bar Sholem's Mechazim. Okay. So that's the case of Mechze. That's the case of Mechze that Rabbi Yosef talks about. Now, the question is, in that third case over there of Mechze, nobody argues against Rabbi Yosef. Abaya brings a question against Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Yosef answers it. Why do we need a paskin halacha like Rabbi Yosef on that? So Tosfos brings up that point and says, the fact of the matter is, like this, we know from a number of places in Shas that later in life Rabbi Yosef became sick and forgot his learning, and we find in many places where Abaya had to remind him of what he had previously taught because he himself had forgotten. So you would think maybe in that case also, since you have Abaya asking against him, sure, Rabbi Yosef is able to fend for himself. Maybe we shouldn't accept that Rabbi Yosef's answer is really the correct answer. No, that's why we have to mention that nevertheless it is. There's a different explanation that some of the Rishonim say. I think Rabbeinu Yonah says that the Gemara knew, the Kabbalah, that the question Abaya asked over there is actually really Rabba's question. Abaya is the one who brought it up in the Bis Medrash to Rabbi Yosef, but it was actually a question that he had heard from Rabba. In that case, it's the machlokas of Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. You would think that the halacha should be like Rabba, like in most of the other cases. That's why we mentioned. Now, the other thing Tosfos mentions is the question, when we say the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef in these three things, are we talking specifically in Masechta Bava Basra, or are we talking about in general throughout Shas? So that is also a halachas we're showing him. Tosfos themselves brings a proof from a different Gemara that it means throughout Shas. Throughout Shas, the only three places where we pass them like Rabbi Yosef against Rabba are these three Sada Inu Masechta. And thus, for example, Tosfos says, we learned back in Bava Kama and in Bava Metzia, we talk about the question of a Shomer Aveda. When you found something lost and you're watching it until the owner comes and collects it, are you considered at that point a Shomer Chinam or a Shomer Sachar? So Rabba said over there Shomer Chinam, Rabbi Yosef said a Shomer Sachar. According to Tosfos, based on that, based on various other considerations, the halacha indeed is like Rabba, he's a Shomer Chinam. Most other Rishonim say that not. Most other Rishonim say either that every rule has exceptions, even if you're saying that the halacha, even if you're saying that the Sada in and Mechza rule applies throughout Shas, there can be other exceptions with halacha like Rabbi Yosef, or they say that in general the rule is only limited to Bava Basra. It's not talking throughout the rest of Shas. You can have sometimes the halacha might be like Rabba, sometimes like Rabbi Yosef. And indeed, most of the Rishonim pass them like Rabbi Yosef in that case over there and say that a Shomer Aveda is a Shomer Sachar.
There's three things here.
So you have Sada in Inu Mechza, but the question is that only in this Mechza, or are we talking throughout Shas?
What was Sada again?
Sada was the case over there with the one brother says, I want to inherit particular piece of the property, and the other brothers argue that we consider it as valuable as Nichsa de Bei Bar Merion, and therefore we don't want to give it to you unless you're willing to give up something else in return.
We don't, according to
Rabbi Yosef, we don't force the other brothers. Yes.
Kinyan
is our case over here.
According to Rabba, we would force
them. According to Rabba, we would force them, yeah. Inyan is our thing over here, where Rav Yosef said, as long as there are silken boats, the Inyan. Because Rav Yosef said, as long as there are silken boats, the Inyan. As long as they're dealing with that topic of conversation about the Matana, then he can change his mind, but not after that. So in general, what we say is all other. So what we say is again, according to most Rishonim, that this machlokas of Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef and the halacha being like Rabbi Yosef only applies to a kinyan sudder. All other kinds of kinyanim, all you have is v'teshkede dibur to change your mind, which we'll talk later on in the parak, the exact definition of v'teshkede dibur, and we'll talk about there why the Chacham established that.
Kinyan sudder, you can extend it because there's no exchange. You're saying
yes. And on top of that, again, you have the machlokas of Rishonim, whether it only applies to a matnas shchidmina, or according to most of Rishonim, no, it applies more generally across the board. Okay. All right. The Mishnah had said, Ha'isha es benav chula. The Mishnah had said that a mother and that a mother and her son, that her son inherits from a son inherits from his mother, but not the other way around. The question is, Ha'tulamali. Why did the Mishnah have to tell us that again? Ha'tana le'resha. We had the previous clause of the Mishnah, Ha'ishas imay, Ha'ishas ishtay. We said there that a man inherits from his mother and a husband inherits from his wife, but not the reverse. So then why is the Mishnah repeating and saying that a mother doesn't inherit from her son?
For the age
of the son. There it said that a son inherits from his mother, but not the other way around. You were saying a mother bequeaths to her son and a son doesn't bequeath to his mother. That's the same thing. The answer is Hakamash Malon or Amar Rav Sheshes Hagoy Sabachaz. Rav Sheshes says Hakamash Malon. This is what the Mishnah wants to tell us with this part. The Ishes, but not Dumya the Ishes Baila. That the din of how a woman bequeaths property to her son, that her son inherits from her, is similar to the way that a wife bequeaths her property to her husband. The way that a son yaushens from his mother is similar in a certain sense to the way that a husband yaushens from his wife.
What is the other way around?
Well, ma isha es baila, when a husband inherits from his wife, when a wife bequeaths property from her husband, then ena baal yorish es ishte bekever, the husband does not yaushin his wife in the kever. Now, what does that mean? Okay, so the Rashbam says that what it means is it's basically restating, in other words, this that we learned yesterday, that the husband only inherits from his wife what's muhtak and not what's roi. Meaning, in other words, that if she is in the kever, if she is already dead, and later on her father or her brother or whoever, somebody who she would have inherited from had she been alive, died, we don't say that it goes to her husband. That in other words, she yaushens it in the kever, and then being already dead, then it goes to her husband.
That would be roi,
not mosek. So just like that. Similarly, af ishas, but no, ena ben yorishas ina bekever. Similarly, when it comes to a mother bequeathing to her son, meaning when the son inherits from the mother, it is only with it's not with roi to him. Ena ben yorishas ina bekever. He doesn't yarshin from his mother when he's already in the kever. Lahanche laachin minaav. That then it should pass from him to his brothers from the father's side. Meaning, in other words, so the Rashbam explains the scenario is like this. You have a woman who has a son from one marriage. Her son also has half brothers from a different marriage of his father. Or remember this is before Chayim Ben Agershim. The father himself could have two wives. Whatever it is, the point is that you have, for example, Yaakov has children from Leah and children from Rachel. So they all share the same father, but they have different mothers. So now let's say, for example, Leah passes away. Yaakov has already passed away, so that we don't have to deal with the whole question of the husband yashining or not. So we have Leah passes away. Now let's say before Leah had passed away, also Reuben had already passed away.
Reuben being her son,
like in the Torah. So now what we're saying is we're not talking about like in the Torah where Leah had six sons. We're talking about, let's say, she had only one son.
Okay.
She has only one son, and Rachel, let's say, also had only one son, Yosef. If we say that the son yarshins from his mother, Bekever, then what it would mean is like this. Again, Reuben passed away previously. Leah now passes away. When she passes away, Reuben is already dead, Yosef is still alive. If we were to say that he yaushens from her bekever, then what we mean is Reuven is going to be in position to inherit from his mother, except that he's already dead, so he doesn't. So instead, it goes to his brother because he doesn't have any children, so it goes to his brother Yosef.
Yosef
is his half brother, but they're brothers from the father's side, which we learned that two brothers, but the same father, and we learned in the mission that brothers from the same father inherit from each other.
Yeah.
So if we said that, then that's what would happen. The nachla would go from Leah to Yosef, but we don't say that. It would have been Roy for Yosef had Reuven still been alive, but he's not. Therefore, instead of going to Reuven and from him going to Yosef, instead it goes to her own Yosef. It goes to Leah's brothers, or if she has any, her father, or whatever. Again, you start doing mishmul. She's still going up there, up the family tree until you find the closest relative, not to Reuven's half brother. Right. So that's the point. The Mishnah is telling. That's the point. Why the Mishnah is putting together the case of a son inheriting from his mother and a husband yaushening from his wife to tell us that they're similar. Just like the husband doesn't inherit from his wife what's Roy, so the half brother doesn't inherit from his half brother what's Roy. That's how the Rashbam explained it. Tosfos asks, the problem with that explanation is you're using the word bakever in two different senses. In the case of the husband and wife, you're talking about the wife, the one who is the inheritor, the one from whom it's going to him, is the one in the bakever.
Yeah.
In the second case, you're talking about that the mother, Leah, passes away, and her son, Reuven, is already in the bakever. It's two different, it's not really the same thing. So Tosfos says that what we're talking about is that it does mean a similar thing. Where is it exactly in Tosfos? I lost the place over here. If the husband himself would have had a Yorish, again, where for example he has, let's say, a son who was not from this wife, but rather from a different wife, or brother or what have you, that has already passed away. That hasn't passed away yet. Again, same idea. In other words, the husband is in a position to yaushen his wife. But if he's already passed away, the husband, we don't say that the nachla is going to go from his wife through him to that son or that brother or whatever. So then it becomes more similar to the two cases over there, the case of the husband and the case of the son. In other words, so therefore, same idea. In other words, so then if the husband himself has passed away, and therefore he's not yarshining before the wife, then when she passes away, it's not going to go through him to his son or brother or what have you. Instead, it's going to go to her own yarshin. And then that's the similarity with the case of a mother and a son. Same idea. That we don't say that it goes through Reuven to his brother Yosef, and similarly, we don't say that it goes, for example, through Yaakov to his son Yosef or his brother Esav or what have you. So according to Tosfos, that's the point of the comparison. Which then Tosfos brings up the question: in that case,
it never goes from one wife to another.
Basically, but Tosfos asks in that case, why does the Gemara take it as a given that that's the case by the husband, and we need to say from that we learn that that's the case by the son. Tosfos says, why should we say that it's more poshut to say that the husband Yaakov doesn't yaushin bakever, that then it should go from him to his other son, let's say Yosef, or to his brother Esav, or whatever? Why is that such a poshut a thing, as opposed to say that it goes from Leah through her son Reuven to Yosef is not such a poshut thing, and we have to derive it from the wording of the Mishnah? Tosfos says a couple of things. Why is one more obvious than the other?
The father is uniting all the sons.
Okay, and?
And therefore it's more logical.
No, but we're not talking about a husband. We're not talking about a father. We're talking about either a mother and her son and her son's half-brother, or we're talking about a mother and her husband's children from other wives. Why is one more partial than the other? Tosfos brings two reasons why. One is because the relationship between the husband and the wife is severed when they pass away. Matter of fact, some of the Rishonim point out, I think the Ritva, yeah, I mean, you see from the fact she's able to remarry. Whereas the relationship between parents and children is never severed even after they pass away. So it's more logical to say, yes, that once Leah passes away, that her Nachla shouldn't go through Yaakov, who after all is no longer her husband, that it should go from him to his other children. That's a double partial. Whereas to say that it shouldn't go from Leah through her own son Reuben to his half brother Yosef, that's something less partial, and that's what we needed to learn from. Never mind who's connected through the husband. They could already be, she and Yaakov could already be divorced at this point. That's not the point. The point is that the fact is Yosef doesn't Yarshin through Reuben, because Reuben has already passed away. Again, if Reuben was still alive when Leah passed away, then yeah, Reuben would Yarshin it, and eventually when Reuben dies childless, then Yosef would get it. But what we're saying is it's more poshut to say that Leah's Nachla should not go through her dead husband Yaakov to his children from other wives. That's a double poshut because Yaakov, as soon as he dies, is no longer related to Leah because they're not husband and wife. Then to say that's more poshut. Whereas to say that it shouldn't go from Leah to her son, to her dead son Reuben, where after all, even he's dead, he's still her son, that it shouldn't go through him to Yosef, that's a less obvious fact. And that's what the Gemara had to learn from the wording of the Mishnah. That's one thing. Then Tosafot says another reason. Because what we're saying is, if the whole thing that we're... basically what we're talking about over here is another case of this business of mishmush that we talked about at the beginning of the paragraph and we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah. We'll learn about tomorrow. Mishmush is, again, that the Nachla should have gone to one person, but instead, because he's dead or whatever, you look for the next relative from that, in that direction or whatever. You sort of like you're going on the tree, you're stopping at each node. Is that person alive? If not, then we're going to go to the next node in the tree and see. That's mishmush. It's more logical to say that mishmush should happen by relatives who are actually blood relatives than relatives only by marriage. So therefore, when it comes to a husband and wife, it's logical to say, fine, you don't start doing mishmash. The husband himself, Yarish and his wife, fine, because they weren't blood relations, but they were husband and wife. They were united together. Right. But that it should go through the husband to other children of his, that's fairly obvious. It's more obvious that that shouldn't be the case. But right. To say that from a mother to son, where after all, then you start with mishmash, after all, if the son himself died childless, you would look for his own sons, his own daughters, his own grandchildren, whatever, then you would think to say that maybe mishmash should also apply from him to his brothers. That's the point of the Mishnah telling us, by putting those two cases together, that no, mishmash does not happen in that case either.